live from New York, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to talk about how pears could be a part of a healthy diet to manage diabetes from North Dakota State University. We'll also talk about how too little vitamin E can cause brain damage from Oregon State University, and how pomegranate juice and eating pomegranates could prevent heart attacks from Technion Israeli Institute of Technology, and how selenium reduces heart damage following a cardiac arrest, and much more on health and healing. Then a special commentary by Chris Hedges from Truth Dig called The Great Unraveling. Also, reasons our jails and prisons are full of black and poor people, Bill Quigley, and half of all medical literature may be fraudulent, false. Who says that? A major medical journal editor. And I mentioned last week how I believe America is now in the grips of a totalitarian rule going forward. And you won't see it if you're a person of means, if you have a higher education and are working and living in a neighborhood that is not your normal neighborhood. But I'll give you an example of how you will manifest this if you're just an average person. Also, my guest in the second part of our program today is Professor Michael Hudson. We're going to continue with our conversations with remarkable minds, how financial parasites and debt bondage have destroyed the global economy. You've heard me mention we do not have an economy. We have economies. And it depends upon which economy that you're involved in, whether or not you're going to profit from all this going on or be harmed. Also today, I will give the names and the amounts of money received directly to the legislators in California who voted on the bill. And that's important because keep in mind that there is a maximum that you're allowed to accept from individuals where you are no longer then able to lobby on their behalf or legislate on their behalf. I believe it's $250. All of these surpass that. Now, Merck is the manufacturer of Gardasil, the vaccine that has been so deadly and is a junk vaccine. And as John Seeler of Cal Watchdog cross-matched the vote for the 499 in the legislature with Merck, AB 499, and with Merck's PAC contributions, came up with this list. I'll share that with you so you will see that these people who voted yes to mandate vaccines with no exemptions received money. Now, they could say, well, it wouldn't matter if we received money or not. We did it because we believed it. They could be right. But it's extremely important that we know, did they break the law? Did all these legislators violate their own law in California? If so, why isn't this entire thing then being suspended until a further complete state investigation by the Attorney General is done? I'll give you that information. Let's begin. Pears are really one of the finest fruits you can have, especially if you're diabetic and you don't want a large spike in your blood sugar. I happen to like the Comus pear, especially when you keep it refrigerated. It's cold, but it's very juicy inside. Other people have Bosque pear they like. All pears are good. Now, we've all heard the phrase, an apple a day. And it's true. In fact, it's actually the apple skin that I've suggested that you take if you're diabetic or you have cancer, or you have heart disease, or you have dementia or Alzheimer's. 4 apples. You don't throw away the apple. You can still juice it or blend it, but it's the apple skins that have the power, and you want to put those 4 apple skins into a blender, add in 1 teaspoon of coconut oil, 1 teaspoon of flaxseed oil, and a handful of walnuts, your favorite non-dairy liquid, like, oh, let's say cashew milk or almond milk or rice milk, and then spike that with a little vitamin C, and that really helps your heart, helps protect you against cancer, but also is very good for stabilizing your blood sugar. Now, this is from North Dakota State University. Here's what it says, quote, "A new study suggests that pears as a part of a healthy diet could play a role in helping to manage type 2 diabetes and diabetes-induced hypertension," that's high blood pressure. "The results published in Food Research International show health benefits of Bartlett pears. Building on their previous studies, the research team from North Dakota State University, Fargo, and University of Massachusetts studied whether the peel, the pulp, or the juice of pears could impact the prevention and management of type 2 diabetes and hypertension, and also destroy that bacteria called Helicobacter pylori, which plays a role in intestinal ulcers. The research team found that in their experiments, especially with high blood sugar and high blood pressure, that it is the phenolics. Now, I've mentioned many times in this program, the phenolics are compounds found in fruits that provide a wide variety of benefits. And the phenolic is in the skin of the pear, more so than the flesh or the pulp. And indeed, your highest phenolic is always in the skin and the peel. That's why to get the really best from oranges or grapefruits or lemons or limes, you should use the skin also. It'll be a bitter, but it would really be powerful. And for people with cancer that I'm suggesting, for example, a juicing regimen in their diet, building up to as many as 13 glasses of juice a day, it's the whole fruit that they're using. Quote, "Such dietary strategy involving fruits, including pears, not only potentially could help better control blood glucose levels, but also reduce our dependence on drugs for pre-diabetic stages, or complement a reduced pharmacological dose of drugs with side effects to combat very early stages type 2 diabetes." So, it's all good when it comes to pears. But there's something else in the fruit family that's good for you, and this is from Louisiana State University, and that is blueberries. Why? Because blueberries can help treat post-traumatic stress disorder. That's correct. A new study has revealed that blueberries can help PTSD, and it's been shown to help manifest with an increase in serotonin and the neurotransmitter norepinephrine, and to increase the norepinephrine might reduce the effectiveness of the conventional therapy, but I don't believe in the conventional therapy of taking Prozac or Paxil at all. I don't believe anyone should take them for any reason. In the new study, Louisiana State University looked at the ability of blueberries to modulate neurotransmitter levels in a rat model of post-traumatic stress disorder, and they supplemented with the blueberry, 2% of the diet blueberry, and then another group with no blueberry, and they found a substantial difference. So, here's the takeaway message. Anyone you know who suffers from stress, distress, post-traumatic stress, have them eat blueberries every day. You can get them fresh. Wild blueberries are your best. But also, you can take blueberry juice. You can take blueberry concentrate or blueberry powder. They're all good. And from the Technion Institute in Israel, a study of researchers suggested just a daily half a glass of superfruit juice could protect against heart attacks and strokes. This was published in the peer-reviewed journal Atherosclerosis, and its findings show that pomegranate concentrate helps delay the risk factors affecting the onset of atherosclerosis and its consequences. Quote, this is from Professor Averam. "The pomegranate fruit addresses both the levels of cholesterol and its oxidation rate because it contains both the phytosterols, beta-sitosterol, and a most potent antioxidant, Therefore, concentrates of pomegranate juice can delay the oxidation of cholesterol, and in addition, it lowers cholesterol levels because the phytosterols it contains without causing unwanted side effects reported by patients taking high statin drugs. And that was published in the recent issue of Food and Function, a journal of the Royal Society of Chemistry. And also, selenium reduces heart damage following a cardiac arrest, a heart attack. This was an important piece of research. And what they found was it didn't take much, 200 micrograms. That's a normal day supply. But most people don't even get that much. So for those of you who are susceptible to any form of heart disease, take a little container, a little small, pill container. You can buy them. And in it, put the following. Put selenium capsules. Put high, what is called high heat index pepper, cayenne pepper, magnesium from citrate, 400 milligram tablets or capsules, coenzyme Q10 from ubiquinone. They come in at 400 and 600. I would do either one. And hawthorn, 200 milligrams. Now, all these are capsules. And in case you find yourself starting to have a heart attack or a stroke, you immediately take these because they immediately can help you. They can thin the blood. They can help with the increased circulation into the heart or to the brain. It could save your life, absolutely save your life. And finally, on this issue, from Oregon State University, published in the Journal of Lipid Research, they found that if you don't have enough vitamin E, you're more susceptible to neurological damage. So my suggestion would be 400 units of mixed natural tocopherols in the morning and 400 in the afternoon for a total of 800 milligrams or units a day. Finally, some ways you don't realize stress is really adversely affecting your life. I remember interviewing early in my career on a regular basis and then having a conversation with Dr. Hans Selye. Dr. Selye was probably the most important person after Pavlov's experiments with dogs. Salivating dogs ring a bell, they salivate, even though there's no food, because they were trained when the bell rang to have food. And what happens to the body's cortisol levels and stress hormone levels when you expect something and you're not given it to it, and suddenly, without what you're expecting, you go into a physiological stressful place. You've heard people say, oh, you know, I get sick. That person makes me sick to my stomach. Well, no one makes you sick to your stomach, but you've localized the stress in your stomach. Or that person gives me a headache. No, you give yourself a headache because you believe that there is a Pavlovian response going off and that person is responsible for it. So we try to make people responsible for how we feel, and we shouldn't. We're responsible how we feel. And then after Hans Selye, who said there's two types of stress. There's good stress, the stress of, for example, going out, seeing a movie or a play or a Broadway show or going dancing, being with someone you like. There's a certain amount of good stress in it. There's certain anticipation. And all these different ways of exploring another person to get to know them, to get to know more about their thinking and their reactions, and suddenly seeing they have a sense of humor like you do, so you can laugh at the same things. These are all good stresses because we're not threatened by them. It's that which threatens us that causes distress. And he made a distinction between the two. So the fear of dying, the fear of disease, the fear of loss of a relationship, the fear of being inadequate creates distress. And then that sets off a whole series of biological consequences, not the least of which is heart disease. It's very simple. When you realize how many people are on caffeine and tranquilizers, were antipsychotic medications each day. It's into the tens of millions just in the United States because we are constantly being stimulated by the fight or flight reactions. And those are not how we should be dealing with our problems each day. We should be measured, coming from reason, not reaction. But you can end up hurting yourself because the heart ends up taking a beating. And a very good study out of Harvard Medical School's Mathias School showed blood samples taken from medical students who were under a high level of stress were found to possess higher levels of white blood cells than normal. And that means cortisol is transforming the texture of white blood cells, making more likely to stick to the walls of blood vessels. That's bad because that's one way you end up with a heart attack. Then you could have your immune system be under stress. As a result, you're more susceptible to catch a cold or viral infection. In fact, it's frequent when people have an argument at night to wake up with a sore throat in the morning. Now, mind you, we all carry in our throats staph and strep, but we don't all get staph infections or strep throat because our body has learned to coexist with certain microorganisms as long as the dominant energy is in the healing and healthy bacteria. And you get stressed, you change that equation, and then you get sick. And all forms of things happen. That's why you never want people with cancer to be stressed. And yet the very diagnosis of cancer is stressing. All the chemotherapy and radiation they take really beats their body to a pulp. It's very stressing. And also, look at what people do when they're stressed. They overeat. They go back to their comfort foods. And those are generally things that are very sweet or very saturated with unusable calories by the body. So we gain weight. And we are the fattest nation on earth. And we are the fattest kids of any developed nation on earth. So our children are eating themselves sick. Adults are eating themselves sick. And a lot of that is due to stress. Also, when you're under stress, your body does not heal the same. That's why when we're in a beautiful environment, a relaxing environment around nature, we heal faster. Interesting how we go to certain clinics or hospitals with no sense of bringing nature to the patient. But in Italy, in France, in India, very common for people to take in what they call the cures. Well, they go to they've had their operation or whatever they're diagnosed with, treatment, and then they'll go to a place and drink mineral water all day and take bitters. And this is especially true in your Scandinavian countries and Japan that are famous for having bitters. And these bitters are generally very bitter herbs that have been put into solution, and you're given teaspoons of these all day long, depending upon your condition. They're extraordinarily important for your immune system. And then they're drinking the water all day long, but in a very relaxed environment. So you want faster healing, be in a de-stressed environment. Also, your sleep is affected. You're more likely to suffer from depression if you're stressed, and you're going to have more ulcers if you're depressed. So it's just some of the ways that being stressed, distressed, the unhealthy distress can impact our bodies. So when you're distressed, you're going to end up paying a price for it. I'm Gary Noll. I want to share this with you also. This is an important article from The Lancet, one of the most respected medical journals in the world. And according to Natural Health, can we really trust the scientific literature? Well, according to The Lancet, they say, quote, a lot of scientific studies that are published are incorrect. And more scientists are coming forward to reveal their research or that their colleagues have been falsifying research. In fact, here's what Dr. Richard Horton, editor-in-chief of The Lancet, says, quote, the case against science is straightforward. Much of the scientific literature, perhaps half, may simply be untrue. afflicted by studies with small sample sizes, tiny effects, invalid exploratory analysis, and flagrant conflicts of interest, together with an obsession for pursuing fashionable trends of dubious importance, science has taken a turn towards darkness. End quote. Wow. How about that? And even the peer review studies are not honest frequently. I interviewed a Dr. Marcia Angel, who was the former editor-in-chief for over 20 years with the New England Journal of Medicine. And she's also now a professor at Harvard. And she agrees with the latest assessment of the accuracy of medical literature. She goes on the record in Collective Evolution article saying it is not possible to believe much, if anything, of what is published in scientific medical journals. She goes on to say, quote, "This is because of the poor judgment of the physicians who contribute to these journals, the lack of ethics in the junior and senior editors, and other similar reasons." And behind all this, we have to ask, who benefits? And the answer is relatively simple. The people who are behind the research. So you won't see the 99 studies they did that were flawed, that had bad results. You'll see the one study that they managed to have some tiny benefit to, and then they'll get a famous ghostwriter to put their name on it for prestige. They'll go to a journal where they have a lot of advertising, hundreds of millions of dollars in ads, and they're pretty sure they're going to get it published. Then they get it published in a peer-reviewed journal, but it has nothing to do with healing, nothing to do with honesty in science. It's a fraud. And that's what people are not aware of. Also, police break in, shoot a woman three times after she calls 911. From Garland Fevitoro, from Cop Block, quote, "A group of 14 police officers broke down the townhome of Amy Bramucci without a warrant and shot her three times after she insisted they leave and called 911. 18 months later, Amy was charged with four felonies in the attack. As news of her story spread, a court imposed an unconstitutional gag order that prevented her from discussing her case on social media. She was later jailed without bond." Now, this was down in Alpharetta, Georgia. It happened at 6:20 p.m. A group of, including 14 of the police officers, three firefighters, and two medics broke into Amy's tract of townhome. The police had no warrant, but received an out-of-state call that there might be something wrong with her. Miss Bramucci takes medication and had gone to bed early because she didn't feel well. So the police had no trouble locating her residence, and they claimed that she had called, but the record showed that she had made no calls whatsoever. When Amy woke up and opened her bedroom door, she says she was confronted by an officer who was pointing a gun directly at her. She asked why they were there, but she received no answer and was told to come downstairs. After seeing her front door broken down by the police, she demanded that they leave. They refused, and Amy called 911 to try to get them out of her house. The 911 dispatcher told her to talk with the officer in charge at the scene, who she later identified. And when the officer refused her request to speak with Lieutenant, she ran back to her bedroom. Officers then followed her up to her bedroom, where they then opened the door and shot her three times. She is now permanently disabled from the injuries. And they all claim, well, we were just trying to save her from committing suicide. She suffered a collapsed lung, shattered sternum, and fractured ribs. She lost 12 inches of intestines and had a lung lobe removed during about a 13-hour operation. Her attackers, the police, nothing. And then on top of that, she was charged because she had, according to the police, quote, aggravated assault resisting arrest and obstruction. So for those of you who live on the Upper West Side, well-to-do, you work at a university, not impossible, but highly improbable such a thing will happen to you. but live where you're not in a green protected zone, and this is normal life. Also, for all the people listening from California, I would suggest that you have your attorneys begin examining the state law to determine what they can be charged with if it is found that they violated the amount of law that a legislator can accept from a person without lobbying on their behalf or legislating on their behalf. I believe it's $250. Here are the people in your Senate who receive money from Merck, the manufacturer of Gardasil, one of the vaccines your children are getting. No science at all behind this vaccine showing it's safe or effective. To the contrary, everything shows it's deadly. It's killed over 140 girls. It has paralyzed tens of thousands. And it's a complete fraud. Kevin DeLone, Democrat from Los Angeles, $2,000. Ed Hernandez, Democrat from West Covina, $2,500. Elaine Alquist, Democrat San Jose, $1,000. Noreen Evans, Democrat Santa Rosa, $1,500. Juan Vargas, Democrat from Chula Vista, $3,500. Alex Padilla, Democrat San Francisco Valley, $300. Kern Price, Democrat Los Angeles, $1,700. Rodrigue D. Wright, Democrat Englewood, $1,500. Louis Wolk, Democrat Vacaville, $2,000, and Leland Lee, Democrat San Francisco, $1,500. In your assembly, Ben Husko, Democrat Chula Vista, $1,000. Bob Blumenfeld, Democrat Van Nuys, $1,500. V. Manuel Perez, Democrat Indio, $1,500. Richard Pan, by the way, he is now a senator, and he's received upwards of $500,000 from pharmaceutical interest, and he is a Democrat from East Sacramento, $1,000. Bill Monning, Democrat Santa Cruz, $1,500. Philippe Fernandez, Democrat Arleta, $1,500. Holly Mitchell, Democrat Culver City, $2,500. Speaker John Perez, Democrat Los Angeles, $1,500. Richard Lara, Democrat Southgate, $1,000. Mary Hashi, Democrat Hayward, $1,500. Roger Dickinson, Democrat Sacramento, $1,000. Nancy Skinner, Democrat Oakland, $2,500. Jose Solero, Democrat Santa Ana, $1,500. Stephen Bradford, Democrat Englewood, $1,500. And Tony Atkinson, Democrat San Diego, $1,000. So Merck donated $39,500 to get yay votes. The question is, did this break the law for the legislators? This is a terrible law, and good science was not allowed to be presented. And open national debates or state debates were not encouraged or allowed. So you should fight it. And finally, before we go to our break, I'm asked all the time, why are our jails so full of Black and Latino individuals? Bill Quigley has the answer. First, understand how serious the problem is. Are you aware that we have 2.2 million people right now in our nation's jails and prisons. 4.5 million are on probation or parole. That's almost 7 million people, or one out of every 35 adults. We are number one in the world in putting people in jail. Why? Why are most of them Black and poor? Well, let me give you just a few of the reasons, not all by any means. One is that it's not about crime. Our jails and prisons have grown from holding about 500,000 people in 1980 to 2.2 million today. The fact is that crime rates have risen and fallen independently of our growing incarceration rate. Police traffic stops also are racially targeting cars. Black drivers are 31% more likely to be pulled over than white drivers, and Hispanic drivers are 23% more likely to be pulled over than white drivers. Connecticut, in April of 2015, reported on 620,000 traffic stops, which revealed widespread racial profiling, particularly during the daylight hours when the race of the drivers is more visible. One stop, Black and Hispanic motorists are more likely to be given tickets than white drivers sought for the same offenses. And once stopped, blacks and Latinos are more likely to be searched. And also a large study out of Kansas City found that when police decided to pull over cars for investigatory stops, where officers looked into the car's interior and asked probing questions and even searched the car, the race of the driver was a clear indicator of who was going to be stopped. 28% of young black males, 25% or younger, were stopped in a year's time, versus white males, only 12%, and white women, 7%. In fact, not until black men reach 50 years of age do their rate of police stops of this kind of treatment dip below those of white men 25 and under. Traffic tickets are a big business, and even if most people do not go directly to jail for traffic tickets, poor people are hit the worst by these ticket systems, as we saw with Ferguson, where some of the towns in St. Louis receive 40% of their total city revenues from traffic tickets. And tickets are moneymakers for towns, so they're going to ticket you even when you've done nothing wrong. The consequences of traffic tickets are much more severe among people poor. People with means will just pay a fine. But for poor and working people, fines are a real hardship. For example, over 4 million people in California do not have valid driver's licenses because they have unpaid fines and fees for traffic tickets. And we know unpaid tickets can lead to jail. In schools, African-American kids are much more likely to be referred to the police than other kids. African-American students are 16% of those enrolled in the school, but 27% of those referred to the police. And many, many people in jail and prison are there because there's tough drug laws, much tougher if you're a person of color, and also much tougher than any of the other developed countries. For example, drug offenses in France, you receive a 7-month average sentence, 12 months in England, and 23 months in the United States. And this system creates a lot of jobs. Jails and prisons provide a lot of jobs to local, state, and federal officials. And to understand how this system works, it's good to know the difference between jails and prisons. Jails are local, usually for people recently arrested or waiting trial. Prisons are state and federal and are for people who have already been convicted. There are more than 3,000 local jails across the country, according to Vera Institute, and together usually hold about 500,000 people waiting trial and an additional 200,000 or so convicted on minor charges. And over the course of a year, these local jails process 11 million people. And the people in local jails are not there because they are a threat to the rest of us. Nearly 75% of the hundreds of thousands of people in local jails are there for nonviolent offenses like traffic or property or something like that. And criminal bonds are big business. Nationwide, over 60% of people arrested are forced to post a financial bond to be released pending trial, usually by posting cash or a house for paying a bond company. And there are about 15,000 bail bond agents working in the bail bond industry, which takes in $14 billion every year. And lots of people in jail need treatment. Nearly 70% of people in prison have medical criteria for drug abuse or dependency, and yet they're not getting treatment. And those who are too poor, too mentally ill, or too chemically dependent, though still presumed innocent, are kept in cages until their trial dates. And lots of poor people plead guilty, not because they're guilty, but because they don't have adequate defense. And the American Bar Association reviewed the U.S. public defender system and concluded it lacked fundamental fairness and put poor people at constant risk of wrongful conviction. And many are forced to plead guilty because there has been incredible coercion by the police to get some false confession. And then the judges just go along with everything. They're part of the corruption of the system. By the way, almost nobody in prison ever had a trial. Trials are the rare circumstance in the criminal justice system. Over 95% of criminal cases are finished by plea bargains. In 1980, nearly 20% of criminal cases were tried, but that number is reduced to less than 3% because today, they make the sentences so severe that if you plead out, you're going to get less than if you're convicted. And people don't have the money to have a proper defense. And truth is not its own defense in our current system. It's just too corrupt, especially when the police lie constantly, as do the prosecutors who are opportunist And really just the whole system is corrupt. Almost one of 12 black men ages 25 to 54 in jail or prison. That's a lot of people. And the Sentencing Project reports that over 159,000 people are serving life sentences in the U.S. Over half are African American and one in six are Latino. So inside prison, the poorest people are taken advantage of against the other system holders. So that's some of the reasons why. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to take a break and come back. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of our listeners, all of the land-based stations carrying us, all of the people listening over the internet, over the telephone, all over the world. We welcome you. This is one place where people of a progressive mind want to hear information, read articles, watch documentaries, calls to action. You'll get that every single day, 24/7. We're going to go to our guest, Michael Hudson, in just a moment. And in fact, what we'll do, we'll go to him right now. He is standing by. Michael Hudson is one of our nation's important economists and Wall Street financial analyst. He is currently the president of the Institution for the Study of Long-Term Economic Trends and was the chief economic policy advisor for Representative Dennis Kucinich's presidential campaign. He is a research professor of economics at the University of Missouri at Kansas City. And his research association at the Levy Economics Institute at Bard College. And he has served as an advisor to the White House, the State Department, the Defense Departments, at the Hudson Institute, in addition to the United Nations Institute, where he became a specialist in global economics. He is the author of Killing the Host, How Financial Parasites and Debt Bondage Destroy the Global Economy. His website is michael-hudson.com. Nice to have you with us today.
Hi, it's good to be here again, Gary.
I'm going to go through some topics and that I believe are not getting the proper objective and insightful information out to the public that we need, and I'd like for you to have your perspective on this. For example, we have been told that we have one economy. Well, I don't believe it. We have many different economies, but we're told our economy is doing just fine right now, and the Federal Reserve has guaranteed no interest rate increase, and everybody said, great, 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 then we can continue our climb up on the Wall Street with the equities getting ever more and more valuable. And at the same time, all of our problems are due to China. So first, an update on the volatility in the stock market the past couple of weeks and how much importance should be placed on China compared to the U.S. and European markets.
Well, you put your finger on the big problem that there are two economies and that all of the growth since 2008, the crisis, has been on Wall Street in the finance, insurance, and real estate sector. It hasn't been for the 99%. So because they add Wall Street to the rest of the economy, and instead of looking at it as overhead of something you have to pay, they look at it as output. So in reality, the financial sector's output is what they're taking from you. That's basically the point that I make in Killing the Host. And you're right, the economy for most of your listeners and for most of the country hasn't grown at all. It's grown from Wall Street. The problem that we're having right now is not the result of China. I mean, it's very funny that you have America and Europe saying the socialist China has to save capitalist America and Europe, as if somehow the U.S. has decided under the Obama administration to promote austerity. He came to office, he was elected in 2008, promising to write down the debt. That was his campaign promise. And as soon as he got in, he changed tack completely and backed his campaign contributors, mainly on Wall Street. He kept the debts in place, and so the economy has had to struggle so hard to pay its mortgage debt, its student loan debt, and the credit card debt and the medical bills, that it hasn't been able to spend money on goods and services. The situation's even worse in Europe, where the whole Eurozone has turned into a dead zone because of austerity. They don't have a central bank to fund government deficits like we do here in the United States. So they're shrinking, and so you can imagine, here's the American market shrinking, the European market shrinking, and they're saying, can't China save it? At least that's a socialist economy. Only a socialist economy can help the country grow. Only the socialist economy, a mixed economy of government and the private sector, can create the demand to employ people. And we can't in America, and because of the policies that are being followed, both by the Republicans and the Democrats. And the Europeans don't want to, because they're in the middle of the worst class war in 100 years. We've seen in Greece, we've seen in Ireland, in Latvia, just, and all now in Spain, Portugal, 30% unemployment rates. This is deliberately created unemployment in order to lower wage levels in what's the real class war. And, of course, their economy isn't growing. So the United States is saying, well, wait a minute, who are we going to sell our manufacturers to? If the Europeans aren't buying, because they're all in debt, and the Americans aren't buying, they're not in debt, can't China save us? Well, China isn't in the business of saving us. It's trying to make a changeover from an export economy to begin to produce for its own population. The Chinese think, why should we have our workers, you know, spend decades producing goods for the American workers just so that we can get dollars that we lend to the U.S. Treasury and invest in Treasury bonds? Why don't we use all this productive capacity we've put together and use it to raise Chinese living standards? That's what they're doing right now. But a lot of Chinese, as they get more money, they think they'd like to get money even faster. And so instead of buying more goods and services, they're putting it into real estate speculation and into the stock market. And in fact, there's a group, there are large individuals that operate sort of like payday lenders or like intermediaries. They borrow from the government central bank, and they lend to individuals to invest in the stock market. And this more than doubled the Chinese stock levels in the last year. So what we've seen in the last few weeks is the market going back down to what it was at the beginning of the year. It's not a crisis for China, but it's a crisis for America, only in the sense that, nobody's is around to buy what we produce because we've left all the domestic American debts in place.
I'd like to have you answer three co-joined issues that I feel are related. One, we have stopped being a manufacturing nation as we were in the 1940s, 50s, 60s, even the mid-70s. We're a service nation now. That's cost over 30 million jobs or people to have to go to a different industry or different workplace, but a lot of that has been outsourced to other countries, not the least of which is India and Bangladesh and China. So bringing jobs back to America, is it possible, because now that other countries are willing to actually give cheaper labor than China, how could an American making a bicycle or a car or a computer compete if they're paying a living wage and someone in China's or Bangladesh is willing to pay such a low amount that they could bring a product into the United States and undercut people marketing in the United States? So that's one issue. Secondly, we have lost 8 million jobs in the United States in the last 10 years because of a visa, bringing professional people in through law firms that make a big, big chunk of money from this, where you come in, you generally are highly educated, highly motivated, but you're willing to work at half to a third of the person that you're replacing. We never have this in the media. We never talk about that. We talk about illegal aliens coming across the border. We never talk about legal aliens coming in on work visas and taking the most senior positions away from people who've built up some seniority and are making a good living wage. We eviscerated 8 million of them. And on top of that, we now say we're a thriving economy because people are having to use their credit cards, which historically we never used because we didn't have them, but they live off their credit cards. So they live off debt. So in the United States, we now think the more debt that you have as a person, a student, on your car, your homes, for your clothes or whatever, that makes us more prosperous. Well, unless I miss something and there's a new alchemy at work, debt is not an asset when you have to pay it back at an usurious interest rate. So would you address these three issues for me?
Well, when you talk about the Americans earning much more than foreigners, the real question is, why is American labor so high-priced? And the answer is that up to 40%, maybe 43%, of income goes to paying the home mortgage for the price of housing. In New York City, as you know, the average rent is $4,500 a month. And the American workers have to pay so much for the housing, largely because, ironically as it seems, taxes have been cut on real estate. And if you cut the taxes on real estate, that doesn't really make it easier for homeowners to afford. Because when you cut the taxes, all this means is you leave more rent available to be paid to the bank for the mortgage. So 80% of bank loans in America are mortgage loans. They're not to help industry. They're not for direct investment. So there really isn't direct investment in factories being built to employ the labor here. And most of the people with money and the 1% have maybe two-thirds of all the money in America. So they're really running things. They say, why should we manufacture when we can make more money just lending to people and collecting interest passively? We can make money in our sleep, and it's much better than and easier than actually going to all the trouble of building a factory and then trying to develop a market and advertising for it. Let's leave that to the foreigners. And, of course, if you would ask an American company, why is America scaling back its manufacturers, they'd say, we're still a manufacturing company. It's just all the manufacturing is owned by the American companies abroad. We're just doing our American manufacturing abroad with foreign labor rather than U.S. labor because the U.S. Is too high priced. So there's a whole confusion of language over what's happening. And America has basically mal-structured its economy. And we've structured an economy to make it almost impossible for us to compete under the rules that there are, where other countries are not so financialized. Other countries don't have to pay as much in rent. Even if Americans got all of their clothing and food and transportation for nothing, for free, they still couldn't even begin to compete with Asia or Europe because of their high housing and financial costs. So that's really what Killing the Host is about. It's about the fire sector, the finance, insurance, and real estate making America uncompetitive.
I appreciate these insights. Once again, I wish we lived in a world where we could forgive this debt, all debt, and start from scratch, eliminate the Federal Reserve, and have no interest from the Treasury, and so people could actually start life without being in debt peonage. That's not going to happen, but we can all have our fantasies. Thank you very much.
It's a good thought.
Thank you very much, Michael.
It's good for being here, Gary.
Michael Hudson. And now for the final segment of our program, we're going to take a little break and come right back. Please stay with us. I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. So good, so good. I got you. Wow, I feel nice. A sugar and spice. Nice to have you with us, everyone. Now, to close out our program, I believe that we should all be writing our legislators to let them know we are in absolute opposition and do not want the Trans-Pacific Partnership at all. But to really clarify the reasons why, let's hear it from one of the few members of Congress that actually supports the people, Alan Grayson, on the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
I'm Congressman Alan Grayson. I want to explain why the current debate about foreign trade is the key to a better future for you and everyone you care about. Trade is a simple concept. You sell me yours, and I'll sell you mine. At least that's the way it used to be. I can remember when our food, our clothing, our cars, our TVs, our appliances, and the homes we lived in all were made in America, proudly made in America. In the old days, the production worker who made an American refrigerator took his paycheck and paid the rent. His landlord went to a restaurant, ordered a good meal, and left a nice tip. The waiter who served the meal saved up, and he bought that refrigerator. That's how our economy worked, and that's how it thrived. Ordinary working people made enough money to afford a house, a car. They earned paid sick leave, health coverage, and a pension, and they could pay for their children's college education. And they didn't have to worry that they could lose all of that overnight. But that's not the way things are today. Today, that American production worker, that landlord, and that waiter are all out of work. We've lost 5 million American manufacturing jobs and maybe 15 million other jobs during the past 20 years. What happened 20 years ago to change that? To ruin the middle-class life that so many Americans enjoy? The North American Free Trade Agreement is what happened. NAFTA happened. Since NAFTA took over our lives, day after day, month after month, and year after year, Americans have bought trillions of dollars of goods and services produced by foreigners, but those foreigners have not bought an equal amount of goods and services produced by Americans. Not even close. In fact, these days, it's often hard just to find products that say, made in America. The difference between what we buy from them and what we sell to them, the trade deficit, has exploded. And that explosion has blasted the American middle class. Here are the numbers, and the numbers don't lie. For the past 14 years, our average annual trade deficit has been over half a trillion dollars. That's a deficit of more than $1,500 each and every year for every man, woman, and child in this country. This is not free trade. This is fake trade. I invite you to look back across history, all the way back to the Stone Age. I invite you to look all across planet Earth, that beautiful blue marble, all 193 nations, all seven continents. You will find that the 14 largest trade deficits in the history of mankind, all of them, are the U.S. trade deficits for the last 14 years. Here on the left was our trade balance between 1962 and 1992, before so-called free trade agreements. And here on the right, our trade balance since then. What sane person could look at these two charts and conclude that what America needs is more free trade? Today, we're creating millions, no, tens of millions of jobs in other countries with our purchasing power, while we're losing millions of jobs here in America because people in other countries are buying their own goods and services rather than ours. They're not creating jobs in America, but they're buying our assets, our stocks, our bonds, our mortgages, our homes, our farms, our coastlands, our big businesses, and our small businesses. Our debt to foreigners right now already totals more than $35,000 for every man, woman, and child in America. Already, one-seventh of all of the assets of our great nation, the result of two centuries of backbreaking labor and sacrifice, one-seventh of the assets in our nation are now owned, already owned, by foreigners. And ultimately, if we keep going the way we're going, they all will be. Because of fake trade, the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. And the end game? The end game is the end of America. Listen, we are in a deep, deep hole thanks to fake trade. A British minister once popularized what he referred to as the first law of holes. When you're in a hole, stop digging. Stop digging. We have to stop digging. The price tag already has reached $11 trillion, and it's rising by more than $1 billion every single day. The only ones who have benefited from this treachery are multinational corporations, and middle-class America has paid the price. It has to end, and it has to end now. But right now, the U.S. Trade Representative is seeking fast-track authority for trade agreements. That authority could prohibit congressional subcommittee hearings, subcommittee amendments, committee hearings, committee amendments, and amendments on the floor of the House. It could limit debate to 88 seconds for each member of the House. But that's not the deepest problem. The deepest problem is that it would put America deeper into that already very deep hole. It's the fast track to hell. That's why you have to direct your congressmen and your senators to vote against it. The U.S. Trade Representative also wants Congress to ratify giant new trade agreements, one with East Asia and one with Europe. This trade treachery would put our $30-an-hour workers directly in head-to-head competition against workers in Vietnam and Brunei who are lucky to make 30 cents an hour. Free trade countries like that are free of health and safety rules and environmental protection, free of Social Security, pensions, and health care, free of child labor laws, free of the right to organize, and even free of the rules against slave labor. This trade treachery also would give special privileges to foreign corporations that neither American corporations nor any living, breathing human beings enjoy. It would set up special tribunals before the World Bank and the United Nations, populated by corporate lobbyists pretending to be judges, which could then award enforceable judgments against our federal, state, and local governments merely for enforcing our health, safety, and environmental laws. It would give away the sovereignty that our founding fathers fought and died for in exchange for nothing. But there is hope. Warren Buffett, the greatest investor of our lifetime, has offered a plan for liberating us from the trade deficit. He would require importers to obtain certificates for the goods and services they sell us. The charges for those certificates could be used to increase Social Security and Medicare benefits, rebuild our roads and schools, and cut our taxes. I support that plan, and I will be offering legislation to implement it. It is the light at the end of the tunnel for our economy. But for now, it's urgent that we prevent things from getting even worse. Write this number down, 202-224-3121. Call that number, and you can reach your congressmen and your senators. To send an email to them, go to www.house.gov/representatives/find and put in your zip code. Tell them no to fast track, no to new trade agreements, and yes to the Buffett plan to reduce the trade deficit. One more important thing. Sign up at tradetreachery.com so that we can keep you posted. And we'll let you know what else you can do to help. It's time to stop digging that hole any deeper. Let's fight back against this scheme that has robbed the American middle class now for decades. Let's fight it and let's defeat it right now while we still can. Let's put our workers back to work, earning a decent day's pay for a decent day's work. Let's heal our economy and heal our nation. Let's show our courage. Let's show our unity. Let's climb up out of that hole and let's raise ourselves up and let's rebuild the American middle class. I'm Congressman Alan Grayson. If we work together, we can make America a paradise.
I'm Gary Null. We're out of time. Thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more on our next program. Have a nice day.
I remember my first love affair. Somehow or another, the whole...